Hey, man, is that the Rock News Weekly podcast?
Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man.
This is Rock News Weekly. Every week, we bring you all the latest headlines in rock, metal, indie, grunge, alt, and classic rock news, this week's new releases, this week in music history trivia, movies, pop culture, and more. Now on to this week's episode. This week on the Rock News Weekly podcast, week of April 29th, 2024, season 6, episode number 17. This week we talk about David Gilmour announcing his first solo album in 9 years, Luck and Strange, to be released later this year in September. Outside Lands Festival announces their 2024 lineup, and Iron Maiden's Bruce Dickinson surprises fans by working the ticket booth selling wristbands for a secret show at the legendary Whiskey A Go-Go. Plus, this week in rock and roll history trivia, weekly WTF, and so much more. Everything's up, rocknewsweekly.com. Watch us live every Sunday, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly, and on demand, youtube.com/rocknewsweekly.
All right, it's time for the Rock News Weekly podcast. What's up, everybody? Chris here, hanging out with David. How's it going, man?
Pretty good.
I'm back from Viva Las Vegas. You missed last week because we were out of town during Sunday. So how has the past 2 weeks been for you?
It was a busy week. I did like sleep all day last Sunday.
Oh, so, man. So you got caught up.
So I got caught up with a little bit of sleep. So that was
nice.
Good.
Right on, right on. Yeah, sure. I bet it's a busy time right now in the school world.
How was the...
Oh, it was good. It was my first time doing the Viva Las Vegas thing. It was Dahlia's second or third time doing it.
Okay.
And the car show was awesome. It was like really unique cars you don't see too often, it felt like kind of
you
those.
You had like a kind of a cool, you had a cool set of cars back in the day, I remember.
Yeah, I had a couple.
The Bug, and then after that, what was the next one?
I had a 67 Volkswagen Bug, and then I had a 72 Buick Skylark.
Oh, yeah, that one, green, right?
Yeah, it was a green one.
Yeah, that was pretty.
And then I had a 65 Chrysler Newport later.
I didn't know
later.
That. When did you have that?
That
like after the Skylark?
Yeah, that was after the Skylark, and it was early 2000s into mid-2000s.
Yeah, okay.
It was a golden brown four-door Chrysler Newport. It was really nice, yeah. So.
And then the gas mileage got to you?
Yeah.
Now you have an electric car.
Yeah, that was right around that time, the mid-2000s, where it was like...
Where it was super expensive.
$4 or $5 a gallon.
Yeah,
then,
yeah.
That was a big deal. And yeah, so I haven't gone back to classic cars yet, but the wife and I, we were talking about it, like, we should get a classic car now as like kind of like a fun hobby thing.
Take it for your...
Yeah, we could do...
For those kinds of events.
Yeah, like, yeah, we could...
Well, I guess you wouldn't drive all the way. Did you drive there?
No, right. We flew. But we could get a Merced car club, you know?
Right?
And we could have our own, like,
you could wear your
50s
jackets and,
you know, and like, a switchblade comb.
Big Bappa, right?
So anyway, yeah, it was hilarious. It was good. I mean, it was fun. It was cool seeing all
that
stuff.
Cool.
The rockabilly scene, the ladies dress up all nice. The guys, like, you know, the greasers we saw.
Yeah.
Lee
did
Rocker.
You do your thing?
No, I didn't. Well,
you didn't really.
Yeah, I did kind of. I had
I can't really front like I'm totally because this is
no.
Like a whole lifestyle.
It is.
It's like hardcore, and they're
but
like,
had,
you're not a real greaser,
right? Yeah, I didn't try and be like I was part of a car club or anything. But I wore like a little button up shirt. You know, I had the jeans with the Converse. I got my Converse out.
Yeah,
and, you know. Supported.
You gotta have the pants that go up like right under,
yeah.
Like on your rib
the
cage.
Zoot suit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They had like a full booth.
And
for
you always
all that.
Like with this and your suspenders, like walking around like this.
Dude, they had these guys that were dressed like that. I got to show you the videos or the photos. Some of them on my Facebook.
Real manly man.
It was good stuff. It was a fun time. And Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats. That was a.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was a cool performance. So.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It was a good time. Good music, and the Orleans Casino where it was held was pretty cool. It's like an old style casino, one of the first ones in Vegas, and
oh,
it's
yeah?
like a New Orleans themed, like a Mardi Gras kind of theme.
Okay.
So it's perfect for the whole rockabilly kind of thing.
So did you get any beads?
I did not. I did not get. beads thrown at me. There was no,
you
no Mardi
willing,
Gras festival.
You weren't willing to do what was requisite?
Yeah, I did flash them. I didn't want to expose myself. No, anyway, so let's get to the rock news this week. It's kind of a short one this week, guys. We don't have a ton of stuff to talk about, but there was a big announcement with David Gilmour and his first solo album in 9 years, Luck and Strange. We'll talk about that. Outside Lands. And then Bruce Dickinson surprising some fans at the ticket booth, selling some tickets. It was pretty cool, so... Outside Lands, first up, I don't know if you saw this yet.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so what do you think of it? Right off the bat, Outside Lands, August 9th through the 11th, 2024 this year. And it looks like the headliner's off to the left, and then we got a
I like it. I mean, shoot. Those are some people that, I mean, it was funny because my wife sent me the lineup, and she was like, I don't know how I feel about it this year. And I was like, oh, yeah. I like it better than last year.
Yeah.
Personally, Killer Mike, Tyler the Creator, The Killers. I like The Killers.
They're Killers. I think that's a solid rock headliner.
Yeah,
You know, a lot of people know their tracks.
Who else was I like excited about? I'm trying to remember. Well, I mean, there were those. I can't really think of the. I have to read it real quick, but
yeah, there's a good combo of everything here.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, that's kind of the way it is.
Country, pop, hip hop. It feels like it's kind of a Coachella almost in a way.
Well, I mean, it's like there's some of those that I know well enough that I enjoy well enough that it would be like, okay, yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, I'll check them out.
That's, you know, that's the feeling of Outside Land.
Yeah, sort
of
just like, having fun, stopping
which is
by.
Fun enough, you know?
Yep. I don't know if you saw it.
And isn't, like, Death Cab for Cutie? Aren't they going to be there? I thought I remembered seeing them on there. Or Postal Service.
Postal Service. Yeah, Ben Gibbard. That's, I think, his other
thing. Yeah. I thought it was up there. I don't see it now, though.
Maybe it's buried in there. I don't know. But, yeah, anyway, I was going to say last night, Stagecoach Festival, Post Malone did his country set at the Stagecoach Festival, and he brought Brad Paisley out there. He brought, like, all these big country stars to, like, join him on the stage.
That's his thing now.
And it was kind of good. I got to say, like, he did these old 90s country songs, and he had these people come out and do, like, he finished with, like, Chattahoochee and, like, all these, like, big 90s country songs.
Wow.
And he actually, like, sang them really well. He was playing,
I mean,
guitar.
I can imagine his voice is, like,
he dressed up the whole
that.
Nines. He had, like, you know, the Wrangler jeans on and everything, and it was funny. It was kind of cool to see him, like, go down that road for a little bit and actually kind of pull it off. He had a really good band with him. Like, so, I mean, it was basically him getting a really solid Nashville band to do all the songs he wanted to do and just kind of do karaoke. And then he has enough pull and money to actually bring those country stars on the stage with him and do all that.
Well, have you heard him on the Beyonce country album?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, he's on there. It's pretty good.
And people thought she was going to come out there, but she didn't. So that was a thing. So I wonder if, you know, he's going to. We were speculating. I wonder what he's going to do for the special country set here. If he's going to do the same kind of thing, have a bunch of guests out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's there. Huh?
Yeah, performing a special country set. So it's his thing that he's touring with this year. And it was interesting. So you'll be in for a treat if you guys are going to be checking that one out, because that was unexpected. Also, Idris Elba, I don't know if you caught
that.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah. I told DJ. I said that to my wife. I was like, did you know that Idris Elba is like a DJ?
Yeah.
Laying down the tracks for you.
Yeah, laying down the tracks in.
In it.
Yeah, in it.
Laying down the tracks for all of you.
Be in pumping it. Your fist there, in
pump
it.
Pump your fist in the club
Idris,
tonight.
Yeah, Idris Elba. Good stuff.
Actually,
anyway.
He's probably a lot posher than that. He's not
right,
the...
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the type.
Yeah,
it
doesn't have the Cockney, right?
Yeah. But anyway, good stuff for Outside Lands. Check that out. They are going on sale, I believe, or they already are on sale. I'm not sure which one, but it's coming up. So, all right, David Gilmour, here's the album cover. I really like the album cover. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
His new solo album, Luck and Strange. First one in 9 years since 2015's Rattle That Lock, and it's going to be coming out September 6th. It's his fifth solo album. It was recorded over 5 months in Brighton and London, and is Gilmour's first album of new material in 9 years. Co-produced with Alt-J's Charlie Andrew, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with Alt-J, that alternative group. Charlie Andrew is one of the guys of that kind of duo. I believe they're a duo. And then Marika Hackman. Marika Hackman is also another great kind of upcoming musician. So it's kind of cool that he's doing this, like, co-producing with a younger kind of generation. And it has, like, kind of a cool kind of sheen, or maybe even electronic kind of edge to it that I'm not really sure. You know, we haven't heard it yet, so I'm not sure if that's part of it, but excited to hear. His lyrics are mostly written by Polly Sampson, which is his wife. She's been his writing partner for pretty much the past 30 years. So of this new relationship, David says, we invited Charlie to the house, so he came and listened to some demos and said things like, well, why does there have to be a guitar solo there? And do they all fade out? Can't some of them just end? He has a wonderful lack of knowledge or respect for this past of mine. So it's kind of funny how he doesn't have this kind of, you know, yes man attitude towards David Gilmour. Right off the bat, he's like saying things like this. He says, he's very direct and not in any way overawed, and I just love that. That's just so good for me, because the last thing you want is people to just deferring to you. So what do you think of that little aspect there?
I'd make a good helper for David Gilmour.
Yeah, because you're not like super fan, familiar with all his stuff. And
yeah, fawning. Yeah, that is interesting to think about, because I think musicians, that's like probably a huge issue.
I think that's a cool way.
Stuck in ruts. And
yeah, well, you get stuck in your ways. You're like, I'm David Gilmour. What, you know, what does this kid know? You know, this young producer kid. But it's cool.
Yeah, like David Lee Roth and Wolfgang Van Halen.
Great example of the other, yeah. That working in the
opposite
way.
What do you know?
Yep. And so it's good to see David being humble and kind of open to this younger generation's feedback and saying, well, I guess that is a good question. Why does it have to fade out, you know?
Yeah.
Or why does it have to always have a guitar solo? Why don't we add something different there?
Yeah.
So it sounds like he was really trying to do something different, and maybe that's why it took so much time. To get to that point, and you know, something good and creative is going to be the result of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know David. He's not my friend.
He's your namesake.
Necessarily. He is my namesake, but I think that's cool of him, mm-hmm. to react in that way.
I thought like, so that's, too. That's was encouraging. Good. It's like cool for me, like that. It's not going to just be another phoned in David Gilmour album that's going to sound exactly like the last one. I feel like it'll sound different.
Yeah.
Some musicians on this one, it says it's Guy Pratt, who's been with him for a long time, a great bass player. Tom Herbert on the bass. Guy Pratt, I believe, is the saxophone. I'm not sure. Adam Betts, Steve Gadd, and Steve Santislau on drums. Rob Gentry and Roger Eno on keyboards.
Oh, Stanislaw. Stanislaw, just like Stanislaw State.
That's what it is.
Maybe, I don't know.
And string and choral arrangements are by Will Gardner, so there's a whole string section. I'll show you the video. I'm not going to play it because we'll get DMCA'd like we always do, but I'll show you it offline when we finish. And it's a really good music video, and I would definitely recommend you guys check it out. It's called The Piper's Call, the new single that's off this album, and the video is fantastic. It was just released on Friday. They did a live debut on his YouTube channel. The album features 8 new tracks. I guess there's a reworking. I'm not familiar with this group or the track. The Montgolfier Brothers, Between 2 Points, which sees Romany Gilmour, I think that's David's son or grandson, who performs backing vocals across the album on vocals and a harp.
So that's cool.
That's either David's daughter or son. I'm not sure, but that's pretty cool. That's he's getting his family involved in here. The title track also features the late keyboard player from Floyd, Richard Wright. And this is really cool. It was recorded in 2007 during a barn jam at David's house. So this is the first time we're getting to hear this, some of the last recordings of Richard Wright before he passed away.
Wow.
So it's going to be on this album. And I'm really excited to hear that. So that's pretty neat for Floyd fans. Here's a version of the vinyl. This is the sea blue, kind of a clear vinyl variant that they're going to have for the album. Pretty cool. What do you think?
So I got a weird thing stuck in my brain.
No, yeah, what?
So is like a barn jam, is that just like what British people do instead of like garage rock?
I guess, yeah.
Like we was a lot jamming out in
jamming
the
out
barn.
In the barn. Yeah, they have a lot of cottages
and
barns.
They're like, yeah,
yeah.
In the barn, and they're like
that's
next to
creative.
A rocky shoreline somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, or on the hill shire, the shire.
Out on the, yeah.
Out
on
the
moors.
Yeah, on the moors.
They're on the moors.
The moors and the shires.
So, okay, sorry, This is where you do want to see families working together.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking about this just as that came up about Dave Grohl and his daughter Last year at Outside Lands,
isn't that
she was
cool?
performing, and I was like, okay, that's...
It's like passing the torch.
You know, I mean, nepotism or what, all that kind of stuff, you're like, man, but I mean, really, it's music and artistry. It's all about emotion and what do people have more emotional attachment to than their children, and it makes sense.
And how cool is that you're able to do that for the kid, you know, in a family type of setting. Like, we were just watching Willie Nelson and Family at Stagecoach, and it was the same thing. He had his son or his grandson there, Lucas Nelson, who's like kind of passing the torch to, and he's taken over a lot of the singing duties on certain songs, and he's got a great voice.
How old is Lucas Nelson?
I don't know. He looks like 30, 40.
Okay.
It doesn't look that old.
Okay.
So,
because Willie, my gosh, he's...
I know, he's 90.
He's 90.
So it's got to be his grandson, like, I guess. Wow. But I don't know. Maybe he had a kid when he was 50. I don't know. It could have been.
It's all that weed, though. He's so healthy. Like, he's just like a...
Yeah.
It seems.
It's awesome. He's fantastic.
Never had glaucoma.
I know, right?
Right.
That's a good point. And we were watching him, and we were like, Willie's sharp as a tack, man. He's 90 years old, and Willie's still up there, like, you know, not messing up on the guitar. Still doing, like, cool solos, singing the right notes, you know. Very impressive.
Yeah.
And David Gilmour is in the same kind of... He's in his 70s. We're going to see a picture here that I have of David. Look at him. He's looking great.
Yeah. Looks sturdy, man.
Yeah. And the video of him, it shows him he's messing around with his dog in the studio. And, like, looks very healthy and happy and, you know, just ready to go. So, hopefully, we'll get some tour dates. There's none to announce, but I have my fingers crossed for that. But check this out. The album is available on vinyl, of course, CD with two extra tracks, and a Blu-ray audio version with four bonus tracks. I'm going to have to get that eventually at some point. All 13 on the Blu-ray are available in Dolby Atmos and 9624 high-res stereo. So you listen to that through a Blu-ray player, your home stereo, it's going to sound amazing. The album's cover image, which I was mentioning, was photographed and designed by renowned artist Anton Corbin, and is inspired by lyrics written in by Charlie Gilmour for the album's final song, Scattered. So there you go. That's kind of a little bit of history and, you know, stuff behind it. Here's the last vinyl variant version. This is the one that I ended up pre-ordering. It's like called like...
Ooh, that's lovely.
It's like a sea...
A little transparent.
They call it like a sea bottle glass, like a sea glass bottle variant. It's supposed to look
nice.
Like a little, you know, worn sea glass. So yeah, I got that one. You can order it on his website. I'm not sure if all the variants are still available. The blue vinyl variant is out on one of the websites that kind of does... it's like a third-party website. I forget which one it is. But this one is available on David Gilmour's actual website. So go to his website and check it out. It's coming out September 6th, guys, and it'll be pre-order it now. They have a bunch of merch packs and all that cool stuff. All right, this was cool. Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden. We're going to get a chance to check him out at Aftershock Festival in Sacramento this year. And in the meantime, he's doing a cool little solo tour right now. So he's not touring with Iron Maiden. So he's getting to do this kind of cool stuff. He's doing this little thing that kind of went viral. Him working at the ticket booth for a secret gig at the legendary Whiskey A Go-Go, which is a really small venue in L.A., you know, in the gist of things. I think it holds maybe 1,000 people, 1,500, something like that. This past week, well, about a week or two ago now, April 12th and April 14th, the shows were announced last minute, so it was secret. There was no advertising. And then he showed up at the box office. The lucky fans who lined up early got a special treat and were greeted by Bruce Dickinson in the box office, selling tickets and meeting fans. So it was Bruce's...
Cool is that?
Yeah. It was his debut.
Shoot, at our theater, the theater workers don't even collect tickets at the ticket booth.
I know,
you
right?
You have to buy them at the concession stand.
And what a cool thing for the lead singer, the main feature of the show, to be in there, you know, doing this kind of thing. It just shows that he's just like his great work ethic and appreciation.
I wonder if
for
he's formerly worked in a booth like that or something.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And you he's know, all he, like pro at it.
You know, he's a pilot, too. He flies Iron Maiden's jet. He flies the entire
the
jet.
Most interesting man in the world.
He is. He really is one of them, I swear. He flies. He's a certified pilot for the past 30 or 40 years.
Wow.
And he's flown Iron Maiden's tour jets their entire tour since the 80s. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah, he's badass.
Brucey.
Bruce Dickinson. So anyway, it's the... first solo concert for him in over 20 years, which is significant, and marks the live debut of the House Band of Hell, which is his collection of musicians that he calls, which is pretty awesome. So I thought that was great. Hell's House Band. And here's Dickinson again with the wristbands he was handing out. And he says, as we were holed up in our North Hollywood rehearsal studio preparing for the tour, we thought that since rehearsals were going so well, maybe we should have a little fun and put something last minute together here in L.A. Putting tickets for sale at an actual box office should remind people what it used to be like when I started gigging. We're raring to go, and I'm just so excited to unleash this band on the world at the iconic Whiskey A Go Go. So that was his kind of kickoff for the whole thing, right? Cool. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that is cool.
So his new album, The Mandrake Project, was released in March. It huge chart success for him. Europe, UK, US, Canada, all that stuff. It's not just an album and a tour, but it's also a comic book series of the same name created by Bruce Dickinson. So,
hey, that sounds pretty fun.
It is. It's got a lot of well-known graphic novel talent, scripted by Tony Lee, who did Doctor Who. Stunningly illustrated by Staz Johnson, who did 2000 AD, with covers and industry heavyweight Bill Sienkiewicz for Z2 Comics, and will be released as 12 quarterly issues collated into 3 annual graphic novels. So how creative and cool is that, right? And
yeah, that's great. I mean, because think about it. That's one of the huge contributions that Iron Maiden has made
generally.
That visual aesthetic that just sticks with people.
I agree.
So influential.
The characters and the album covers and all that stuff are so iconic. So good for him, and very cool him just handing
creating
out.
Creating something cool again.
And I would have loved that. That's once in a lifetime, man. Been able to have get your wristband put on by Bruce Dickinson at the Whiskey. That's a tableside chat for sure. That's pretty cool. Anyway, right on. All right, so one of the last stories of the week. I don't know if you ever see Walmart when they make little posts on their official social media. They'll highlight team members. They'll be like, you know, Joe is doing a great job in plumbing. Let's give shout out to Joe. Well, they did one for a heavy metal fan that ended up going viral, and it was a fan that worked in the produce department. He was one of their new employees, and it says on Walmart, Johannesburg. So it says, meet Christian from our meat and produce department. He's our new level up, and he's doing a fantastic job. Thank you so much, Christian, for all you do. We are fresh. I'm going to put this on the bigger screen so people can see a good shot of this guy. He's badass. He's, you know, typical metal fan.
He looks so Midwest, too.
Yeah, very Midwest metal fan. He's got the piercings, face tattoos. He's got the Thy Art Is Murder long sleeve shirt on full display there. So,
and you know this guy loves his mom.
Of course, right? He's a mama's boy for sure. Well, Thy Art Is Murder caught wind of this, of course. And they made a public appeal to Christian's place of employment, asking them to let Christian have a day off to go see him at the House of Blues on April 20th.
Nice.
Well, this is an older article because Walmart did respond, and they actually gave him the day off due to the overwhelming response on social media. And they said, here was the post, that he had to wear the Walmart smock to get the free ticket. It says, yo, Walmart, let our man Christian have the day off for our Chicago show. Free tickets if he wears the Walmart smock. Wore that. And so he did, and he went, and he wore the Walmart smock at the 420 show at the House of Blues in Chicago.
Just this last, wow, that's funny.
So isn't that great? So that's the power of social media and kind of a inadvertent thing from
Walmart. Look at that solidarity, labor solidarity
from the metal community.
Metal community, yeah, that's
isn't that
so
great?
Yeah, get him a day off.
That's great. Gave him free tickets.
That's
so
cool.
All right, last story of the rock world. This is kind of a sad one, but a very important one, and I thought it was kind of crazy the way this happened. So this is an official post from Megadeth. Check it out. And this is Dave Mustaine from Megadeth posting this. He says, I just got a shocking FaceTime video call from my sister, Suzanne. Sadly, she's going to be leaving this earth in the next few days as she is in the grasp of Parkinson's and dementia and is starting to have her organs shut down. That was hard enough, but the fact that we haven't spoken in probably 20 years is even worse. Imagine my delight to get a FaceTime video from her today. Even though she can't speak anymore, I knew it was her. I just kept telling her how much I love her, and I know she's going to be slipping out of this body and her spirit's going to be free soon. So bizarre that it's National Sibling Day that I would hear from my sister that I haven't spoken to in so long, in the state affairs she's currently dealing with, and the fact that even though she didn't want to have anything to do with me growing up because she was a Jehovah's Witness, I kept trying, and imagine how happy I am to have seen her phone call today and not be a butt dial. Dave Mustaine.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? And kind of sad and crazy at the same time? Like, yeah, I just thought that was wild and just kind of, you know, shows that, you know, I don't know, things happen in mysterious ways or whatever. It's National Siblings Day. Hadn't talked to her in 20 years. Got that call. And, you know, super sad, of course, but still, I thought it was...
That's a story. That's...
Yeah. Isn't that wild? And
just, that's not... I mean, that's nice for him to share.
Yeah, because that's a private thing that I'm sure not a lot of people would, you know, but... It also just to share for everybody out there that, hey, maybe there's somebody in your life that's in that same boat, right? That you haven't talked to in 15 or 20 years. You don't need National Siblings Day to kind of do it. But
yeah, just reach out.
You never know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just you never know. And it would suck to have the what ifs instead of, you know, doing it and then at least you tried and whatever, right? So anyway,
yeah.
Thought that was cool for Dave to share that. All right, we got some birthdays. Let's get to the birthdays this week.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy.
No,
birthday.
All right, it's birthday time. David, take
Alrighty,
it away.
Stan Fraser of Sugar Ray, born in 1969. Aaron Comas of the Spin Doctors, born in 1968. That's kind of surprising to me. We got Sugar Ray and the Spin Doctors around the same time.
I know, and those were huge bands in the 90s, so let's do the math. So
yeah.
That's 10 years is 79, 20 years is 89. So, yeah, they were 21 years old, right when probably they started playing music, getting in the bands. And then in their early 20s in the 90s, that's when they took off, right?
Yeah, that's wild.
Isn't that wild?
Patty Schemmel of Hole was born in 1967. Billy Gould of Faith No More, born in 1963. Boris Williams, formerly of The Cure, was born in 1958. Eric Avery of Jane's Addiction, born in 1965.
Great bass player, by the way. One of my favorite bass player from that group.
Really iconic style.
Yeah.
Andy Bell of Erasure, was born in 1964. Bjorn Ulvaeus of ABBA, born in 1945.
Bjorn!
Yeah, Bjorn.
Shout out, Bjorn.
Stu Cook of Creedence Clearwater Revival, born in 1945 as well. Jose Posillas of Incubus, born in 1976.
Real quick with him, I got to interview him last year. He's
oh,
the drummer,
really?
The drummer from Incubus. I got to interview him at Aftershock Festival. And it's up on our Rock News Weekly YouTube channel under our interviews thing, if you guys want to hear that one. It was pretty cool, and he's a really nice guy. So
shout out
to him.
Chris Marsh of The Replacements was born in 1961. Roger Taylor of Duran Duran was born in 1960. Giorgio Moroder was born in 1940. Hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah, Moroder.
Okay. Patrick Stump of Fallout Boy was born in 1984. Oh, now they're younger than me.
I know, 84.
Ace, yeah, I was like, whoa. Ace Frehley of Kiss, born in 1951. Kate Pearson of the B-52s, born in 1948.
They were playing in Vegas when we were there.
Were they?
I didn't see them, but I was like, I couldn't believe it.
I was just going to say, yeah, I would like to hear what's going on with the B-52s lately.
My dad said he saw this. So my dad saw the show, I guess, last year. So we went to Vegas last year, and we did like a trip with my dad, and we all went, you know. And he went and saw the B-52s, and he said it was absolutely horrible. He was really like... apparently like upset at how bad the show was. Like I think it was because he was kind of drunk and he was probably just like had these high expectations.
Oh, this is gonna be great.
And it was probably just too weird or like none of the hits. And then they didn't play the hit until the very end, of course, Love Shack and one they wanted to see. And so I think he just had to sit through a bunch of stuff he didn't
want
to see.
So he's like, man, I don't know any of this. He's like, dang it, it's not all just the Love Shack over and over.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my B-52
story. Gotta prepare yourself with realistic intentions, right?
Yeah.
Daisy Berkowitz of Marilyn Manson was born in 1968. Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth was born in 1952. What the heck? That's wild. Like,
yeah.
Sonic Youth is the same age as my parents?
I know. When Sonic Youth was big, she was 40.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Kim Gordon was, and Stan, Thurston Moore, he was older too. And like, yeah, you think
that's kind of weird to think about, like,
yeah,
you being older and then having younger people interested in your music.
Yeah, especially around that time too. Yeah, like Sonic Youth was, you know, they got big in the 90s, but they were big in the 80s too, kind of big, but they started in the
80s. Yeah, maybe we should like start a real band, a real
now
big
that we're 40
popular band
plus.
Now that we're 40.
Yeah.
And then we could, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Mike Hogan of the Cranberries was born in 1973. And the one and only Master P born in 1970.
Yeah, on
Look
April 29th, my same as my my sister's birthday. She's there.
Really?
Yeah.
And he continues to make them say,
That's right. Actually, he's like really, like, he's like a philanthropist in the area. Like,
is he?
Yeah.
He I can imagine that. I mean, because he has that real, like,
he loves,
go-getter,
yeah,
like,
and
really
he loves
go-getter
his community.
Style.
Like, all the stuff. Like, I saw some, he has these, like, chips and, like, stuff that all the money goes to proceeds to his local, like, New Orleans communities and, like, wherever he's from.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, he has, like, these lines of, like, food and, like, drinks and ice cream and stuff, like, and all the money, like, the proceeds go to the charities.
No way. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Hey, heck yeah, Master P.
Yeah, he's a pretty good dude.
Willie Nelson, born in 1933.
Yeah, we were
91
just saying,
years old.
He's 91, and he just turned 90 last year, which is pretty crazy, man. And he's at Stagecoach Festival this year, still kicking ass.
Good golly.
Yeah, wild.
J.R. Richards of Dishwalla was born in 1972.
All right, I think that's it. But a lot of birthdays. Sorry,
yeah,
I didn't have any pictures, but just too many this week. All right, we got some trivia. You guys ready? Here it is.
This week
in rock and roll history.
Trivia?
All right, time for some trivia. This week in 1956, this musician headlines the first day of a three-day concert organized by the DJ Alan Freed in Hartford, Connecticut. Over the course of the shows, 11 fans are arrested by the overzealous police. It's a litmus test for rock concerts and their effect on young people. So who was the headliner? Was it Jerry Lee Lewis? Was it Chuck Berry? Was it Fats Domino? Or was it Sock Hop Crosby and the Switchblade Comb Cocaine Cats?
That's a good one.
Of Cleveland.
That's a good one. Of Cleveland.
I should have put Cleveland or Connecticut. It was Connecticut.
Connecticut. I think I'm gonna go with Jerry Lee Lewis.
Who got him up into a fervor?
Yeah,
with their wild piano frenzy. Well, could have been guitar playing too.
Well, I mean, maybe Chuck Berry. I don't know. Chuck Berry is the granddaddy rock and roll.
Going Jerry Lee Lewis?
Yeah, let's go with Jerry Lee Lewis.
It was actually Fats Domino.
It was Fats Domino.
That's
right.
Yeah, so here.
So it's like kind of before the real rock and roll-y rock and roll, huh?
Yeah, so here's a little bit of the history. And there's a picture of the news headlines in like one of the bills. It says, riot breaks out at SJ Dance Hall. And this led to the whole thing kind of demonizing of rock and roll and, you know, and how they kind of portrayed it in the media.
Okay.
So 11 fans were arrested by the police. It was a litmus test for rock concerts and their effect on young people, as psychiatrist Francis Braceland testifies afterwards. So they had like a thing,
I can just
like
see
a,
it.
Like a
panel
a council.
Of experts.
Yeah. And so she testifies afterwards that rock music, get this, is a quote, communicable disease with music appealing to adolescent insecurity and driving teenagers to do outlandish things. It's cannibalistic and tribalistic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How like racially coded is that, man?
Dang. Yeah, these black headliners. Oh, it's cannibalistic.
It's cannibalistic and, wow, that is
tribalistic.
Jacked up.
Isn't that crazy?
That is so jacked up.
Isn't that wild?
So then he got more popular.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids were like, wait a minute. Yay.
Well,
sounds good.
It's like the effect that the when Tipper Gore put
Tipper
the
Gore, yeah, with the
parental advisory.
Parental advisory made him more popular.
Everybody's like, oh, well, I want to hear that album now.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know? So, you know, if they demonize it, I think it's funny. They try and, like, they're trying to squash it, but it actually has the opposite.
Well, I mean, really, like, what are you supposed to do? The whole troll kind of culture, whatever, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
Cannibalistic?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with that? Like, that's like just inviting the trolling tendency, right?
Well, imagine back then in the 1950s, like, you know, hearing that kind of stuff, and then, you know, the wife is reading, or the mom is reading that in the newspaper.
Like, oh, my goodness.
And the kid's like, I want to go see Chuck Berry at the local hall. It's cannibalistic and tribalistic music. I'm not having you go out there.
Right?
You know? It's crazy.
Right?
It's so funny, man. Look back in history on some of these things. It's wild. All right.
I mean, it's some things, but it's definitely not cannibalistic.
Yeah. Maybe tribalistic is a little borderline, you know? Like, I
you
guess
know,
you could
get
say.
People in groups or whatever, but good golly. That's funny. Miss Molly. Good golly, Miss Molly.
Check it out. New rock and metal album's out this week. David, what do
Look
we got
this.
Here?
Look at this. Okay, we got Accept Humanoid.
Humanoid.
And that is very, I mean, come on with
well,
that.
Well, I think, well, there's a lot going on
Blurred
here.
Blurred out faces.
He's violating workplace boundaries, first of all. We got the supervisor coming in.
Touching
to giving, oh, you're doing a great
yeah,
job,
yeah.
Sandra.
Giving him a massage
doing
on
a
the
great
shoulders?
Job, Sandra. I wish you could just work on this factory line a little bit faster.
Look at them. Look at that. Well, they got the blurred out faces.
They're
and
like,
it's a robot AI.
They're
like, it's like robot boss.
Proletariats, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
You just wait. No, I like that. I mean, I don't disagree necessarily with the concern that people have there.
With like,
you know,
yeah.
I think that is definitely
AI and robots and
I do
such.
Think, though, some of the AI fears that we have now are kind of overblown, so that the less like lethal aspects of AI can be used as a tool to weaken
right.
like worker rights.
Yes.
They're like, well, what are you gonna do? We'll just get in
we'll
AI.
We'll just get AI to do
like,
it.
Well, it's not like AI can really do your job, but we'll get them to do it.
It's tough. Like, yeah. I work in radio, and that's one of the things where like voice protection is not a thing. Like, you cannot copyright your voice.
And they just get and record it. And
they
then
can get my speech, record it, and then make a DJ out of my voice and algorithms and whatever. And they could have him do my job instead of me, you know. There's nothing from stopping them doing that right now legally, you know. And that's why Hollywood had
gotta
to do all
get
that.
Some, we've got to get some
That's
some
why
laws.
Hollywood had to do that. People are like, oh, Hollywood, you know, those, you know, lefties out there in Hollywood, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Thank goodness.
Yeah, because they're the ones that are actually ahead of the curve on this and see the writing on the wall that they could lose their jobs. And there was it was already happening, like in that, I guess, that one that came out on Amazon that they remade Roadhouse. That one featured, I don't know if in the final product it has it in there, but it was going to be shot during the COVID stuff that was happening, uh-huh. and they were shutting down the studios, and they're like, no, we'll just use AI, and we'll get people to do this
Take
and that.
Take all the
right.
extras and then turn them into a computer.
Yep. Even maybe the main characters, too. I don't know. We don't know the extent of it, but they tried to do that, and that was one of the catalyst reasons for the strike was big budget big budget like studios trying to do it already like with AI like and so that's the thing, man.
Well, I think the truth of the matter is it's like that, like I was saying, the fear that they can actually do it is more powerful than the fact that they, like, I don't think they could do it and do a quality product like anything compared to what the human can do at this
point,
but they can still say, hey, this is what we're gonna do,
and then like gets smarter and it learns too,
All right, Dark Throne, It Beckons Us All. Hey, that's pretty classic looking.
Yeah, looks cool.
Yeah. All right, Glassing the Other Side of the Mirror, or From the Other Side of the Mirror.
Yep, I don't know.
It's a nice looking album.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's like interesting.
Paint splatter there, American flag sort of thing. Inter Arma, New Heaven. These vinyls are really nice looking.
Yeah.
Hovde. Hovde, so it really is Hovde.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's meant to look
what
like
What kind of music is that?
It's like indie, I don't know. I've got to try and think of a comparison or something. Like it's not like the Strokes, but like...
anything like Iron and Wine?
No, it's not as soft as that.
Okay.
It's more like, I don't know, like a kind of an indie upbeat.
Like a post-punky kind of?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. I played them on the garage before.
Oh, okay. Iron and Wine, Light Verse. That's a lovely, whimsical looking album.
It's cool. Cool vinyl, too.
Yeah. Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Yep.
Fucking it up.
Yeah, that's the new one that came out on Record Store Day, and now it's like an official release as well.
Oh, and are they going by The Horse now, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. That is interesting how they have done that.
I don't know. Pet Shop Boys, nonetheless. I like Pet Shop Boys.
Their first new album in a while.
A long time, huh?
Good for them.
St. Vincent, All Born Screaming.
I like that album cover, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Yeah, she's
three
good.
Arms there?
It does look that way, but it's actually
her
leg.
Yeah. Yeah, it's her leg.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty cool. All right. I think that's it for the albums. New Blair Witch Project reboot was announced.
Okay.
Yeah, from Lionsgate and Blumhouse. It excited many fans, but the actor Joshua Leonard, who starred in the original film, is apparently not on board with this. Here is a post of him. This is what he posted on his Instagram to share a passionate response to the news, apparently regarding the studio's treatment of himself and co-stars. So he says, this is what he says, going public with this and would appreciate the amplification. So this is my face on a press release for a film being made by two major studios. Both I've worked for, both I respect. The weird part is that I didn't know anything about it until a friend sent me a congrats screenshot yesterday. My frustration is compounded because I've been trying to get Lionsgate to engage for over a month about a BWP charity screening I'm put together for O Positive Fest to raise money for artists without healthcare, and no one will get back to me. And yes, I've been thinking a lot about this time and seeing my BWP collaborators recently sharing memories, sweet and effed up ones. In 1999, it says fact, in 1999, BWP's OG distributor, that's Blair Witch Project, claimed to have released the most profitable independent film ever, bought for $1 million, grossed $250 million, while internally they told us that they were actually losing money from marketing expenses, so we might end up owing them money. Fact, because we had our real names in the first film, the studio claimed copyright. We had to take them to federal court to win our names back. Isn't that crazy?
My gosh.
Isn't that wild? I didn't know that. Another fact that says, a Hollywood insider told the press that we, actors, were paid $4 million as a buyout for our ownership points, when in reality, we made $300,000 and never saw another dime. After buying a car and paying off his student loans, Mike was back moving furniture within 12 months of the release of the movie, while still on magazine covers.
My God.
Isn't that crazy? There was also many
factors. Man, that's so par for the course. Like, you think of like all those hip-hop artists that just get totally fleeced.
Yep. And he says, but at this point, it's 25 years of disrespect from the folks who pocketed the lion's share, pun intended, of the profits from our work, and that feels both icky and classless. So, just hearing him, you know, and that, I was excited when I heard about it, but I was like, I don't know. Now, hearing his point of view on it, I'm like,
I didn't realize it was all...
Yep.
Good gosh, so, didn't I watch that movie the first time with you, I think?
Probably.
I think so.
Yeah, in the late 90s.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was all of this stuff. And it's like an insult to injury.
Yep.
Like one thing on top of the last thing.
And
my
he's
gosh.
Trying to do this charity thing and they won't get back to him on that. And so they're going to push ahead with the movie without his consent, really. So anyway, you guys can check it out. More info on his Instagram, Joshua Leonard. You guys can check that out. This is the last story of the week, guys. I don't know if you saw this. Dubai flooded. If you guys didn't notice this, the National Center of Meteorology, a government task force responsible for cloud seeding missions. Have you heard about cloud seeding?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they denied reports that it carried out the weather modification technique in the run-up to these crazy floods that they had.
A little too much.
Yeah, it seeded those clouds a little bit too much. If you see from the photos here, there was a video of the planes trying to leave the runways. They were just like treading water, like hydroplaning across the entire country and the area. So
my gosh.
Seeding missions have been going on since the 90s, and more than 1,000 hours of cloud seeding now performed annually, but I guess it's starting to have kind of an adverse reaction. And they're saying the infrastructure in the UAE are not designed for this type of weather. They're designed to endure weather patterns typical to the region, minimal rainfall.
Yeah.
So they have to like redo everything.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine like they don't have probably
drainage. Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
My gosh. Well, there's just one more thing.
Yep.
Because that's the thing is, I mean, with climate change, with warming, you have more air, like the capacity of the air to hold water is greater.
Yeah.
And so then when it rains, it rains more.
It rains so, when it, like
and
the
if
old
you're throwing
saying
up
goes,
a bunch of sulfur dioxide into
yeah,
the air.
To seed the clouds.
To seed the
on
clouds.
Top
and
that.
You're like, oh, shit.
We did it too much.
We did it too much, man.
Well, crazy stuff. Don't be messing with Mother Nature. She's going to make you regret that.
She'll get you.
All right. That's it for us this week, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
Tune us in. RockNewsWeekly.com, YouTube channel, all socials @RockNewsWeekly. We'll see you guys next time. Have a good one. Peace.
See you later.
Bye-bye.